So today I'm joined with Amrit Gaur Benji. Benji, I'm going to hand it over to you to introduce yourself, your Sikhi journey, and your poetry story.
Hey, my name's Amrit. Amrit called poetry on most of social media. I kind of do poetry as well as like other stuff like art and sometimes photography, just depending on what I'm feeling. Yeah, it's anything that will create an outlet for the thoughts I'm having, be that political thoughts or spiritual thoughts or just emotional thoughts. I chose poetry as being my primary one because you can just see yourself in the writing. So no matter what I write, people can listen to it or read it and they can just insert themselves into the story and interpret it how they like. And that was kind of inspired by just like the way that we have so much art in Sikhi as well. Like we have so much poetry that is Bani, and it's just, it changes, the interpretation of Bani changes with your experiences. So I think poetry was just something I felt comfortable expressing myself through. And in terms of my Sikhi journey, I think it's always been like a Sikhi journey since day one, from your parents telling you about Sikhi and how you should grow up within Sikhi and what's not within Sikhi, to just meeting people your age. I think mine really began when I was right around in sixth form and university, when I started joining Sikh circles. So my Sangat was actually people my age that were on the path of Sikhi and were openly talking about Sikhi, and it wasn't something that they were ashamed of, which was sort of my high school experience of like people of color being ashamed of their skin color, their religion, stuff like that. So I think the main time it really took a turn was in university when I started joining Sikh SOC, like Sikh Society, which is just basically a club for Sikhs, and you can just like chill and do different events. Sometimes they went bowling, stuff like that. So I met people my age that were really open to discuss Sikhi, and from there we kind of started taking Sikh studies lessons together and stuff like that. And that really just branched my poetry and my sort of love for Sikhi and the journey I was going on. So they started overlapping a lot more than they would have done before. And I actually started my poetry during university as well. So I feel like that Sangat really did help me build my confidence to just like actually express myself, because I was really hesitant at the start. So anyone who's been with my journey in the beginning, they will know that I used to sign off my poetry with AK, because I did not feel comfortable attaching a religious name and core to my poetry, because it wasn't just always about Sikhi. But as I got into it more, I realized that a lot of it does stem from Sikhi, even if a lot of it is Manmukh or not directly related to Sikhi. It's about my experiences as a Sikh, and that lens will always be there because it's something my parents have given me. So yeah, and I just wanted to just share that experience so people know that there's like different types of Sikhs out there. I feel like our community does not really have the representation, especially in the diaspora. So we kind of think that there's like two sides of the coin. You're like either really religious or you're like really not religious. And it's just like, I just wanted to put myself in that story because there was no one telling my particular story. And from that, I just realized that everyone just needs to really be encouraged to tell their own story, because no one can speak up like up for us. Like there's such a wide variety of us out there. So yeah, I think that's all I can say at the moment.
I actually am very excited about this podcast because I don't think I could talk to anyone better about the topic that I'm going to talk about. Because I mean, you love your books. There's no secret, and the fact that you love your books, I'm always seeing you opening some new books. I think this morning I saw a story about a John Green book, which is actually it actually looks really good, Benji. I might have to borrow it from you.
Yeah, you can have it whenever.
But also your poetry is so good, and I want to ask you to share some of the poetry that you've written already, any of them, and kind of talk through them if you don't mind.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I'm literally just scrolling down my Instagram as you speak. And the one on my profile that I think is like one of the more recent ones is one I wrote for Gurpurab of Guru Nanak Dev Ji. And it was, "He heard the cries of the many and started by sending one, who told us we were all one, no man above, no woman below, no king or beggar, no better or worse, to be one with God and to be one with one another." Okay, clearly I don't need my
I
poetry out loud.
love it. No, I love it. I actually love your poetry so much. That I think I posted that myself. Was it that one that I posted?
I think so, maybe.
Yeah, I did. As someone that isn't like good at poetry, I love reading.
Well, I'm sure you're good at poetry. It's just practice.
If I put bars together right now, it's not going to make sense. Not one part of my body can rhyme. I have no rhythm in me.
All my old posts are archived now, right? So luckily everyone struggles with that.
Yeah, so talk to us about that poem that you made. Like, how do you firstly come up with your poetry? And like, what's the inspiration behind it as well?
There's two ways I write my poetry. One is, oh my God, I need to write poetry. I haven't posted something in a long time. I'll sit down and literally just give myself a word or a topic to write about.
Mm-hmm.
And I will, whatever thought comes to my head first, and I mean whatever thought comes into my head first, I will write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I will be like, okay, this is like a crap idea, this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like carry on that process of, okay, this is a good idea, bad idea. And then after whatever's in my head has come out, I start editing it. So I'm like, okay, this doesn't rhyme, this doesn't go. I just like edit it into something that's acceptable as a poem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is like free verse and stuff. But most of the time when I do write, it's just I've been doing something and something has formulated like in the back of my mind where I'm like not even aware of, like, I'm not actively thinking about writing a poem. It's just I'm doing something and a thought comes into my head. So I just write it down. And like the previous one, I'll just like slightly edit it sometimes. Sometimes I really don't. Like sometimes it'll be whatever thought came into my head, I'll do like a little doodle with it and then just post it and never look at it again. But like sometimes, because your thoughts are really unfiltered and they make you really vulnerable and sometimes they're just not ready to be shared, I just kind of like touch stuff up so I can share it. So with this poem, I'm pretty sure I was reading Barney interpretations, and I think it was like Barney interpretations, or it was like a Jenam Saki kind of thing. I say thing because like it was in English, so I'm like not even sure. It was like a short paragraph of Guru Nanak Dev Ji, and I realized that Gurpurab was coming up, so I just wrote whatever came to my mind while I was reading those things. So I try to make sure every single word links back, because when I started writing poetry, a lot of it was Christian imagery. And I realized that's because that's why I was exposed to the books I was reading and just stuff like that. So I spoke about like fallen angels a lot, angel wings a lot, halos a lot. And I still do sometimes, but I'm really aware of it now because I realized that every single word has like a sort of interpretation. So when I do write, I really try to make sure that it's not like something that can contrast the emotion or the message that I'm putting into it. And then anyone else can interpret it however they like. So like, I'm not telling people what to feel. It's just how I think of what I'm feeling, if that makes sense. It's like me trying to reanalyze what I'm feeling. So sometimes something will come out. I'll be like, oh, is that what I was thinking about, kind of thing. So yeah.
So you spoke about reading books about interpreting Gurbani, mm-hmm. and I've seen a couple of those on your Instagram as well. Can you talk to me more about the books that you have read and how they are kind of structured?
Okay, so I haven't read that many because I feel like I really came on this journey really recently. So my books mainly just consisted of fantasy up until like university, when I was like, oh no, I need to actually learn our history and Barney and stuff like that. Because I'm not going to lie, I had like zero interest in picking up a history book. I really did not like history. But I realized that was because all the history we learned at school was not my history. Like, had nothing to do with me. We didn't even learn about colonization. So like, there was like no way I could like care about what the Romans did. So after that, that's like when I started picking up the books. So the main books I've read were in a stall when I went to a samagam. And they were all Pingalwale, that Amritsar charity for like disabled kids and orphans and stuff like that. And they were giving away free books. So I was just like, oh, okay, these books look cool, might as well. And so we gave them some seva, took books, and I realized that they were like commentary books. So it wasn't like you know how we get the English Gurkhas? So we have the line of Bani and then the line of English underneath it, right? So that's the good guy I had growing up. So I've like read like one liners of like, this is what is like the projectors and the Gurdwara is. And I was always like, what is this? Like, this is so repetitive, I don't get it. And I also wasn't into poetry at that age, so I don't think I was able to like even look beyond the sentence that was in front of me. I remember picking up those books. So you have the Bani, you have it in Punjabi, and you have it in Hindi. There's a whole section in English that is talking about, okay, so this is the context for this Bani, and this is the what the Bani means. And obviously, because it's someone reading it and translating it into English, it's an interpretation, right? Because the moment you've read the Bani, it's different in everyone's head, right? So I say interpretations as well. But yeah, so it's like a, sometimes there's a word that they're like, okay, so this is referencing, so say like, you know how like they reference like the different gurus in Bani sometimes, or they reference different Sikh figures? He gave context for like who those figures are, which was really helpful for me. And all the books are available on their website, bingawale.org, as a PDF. So I think it's just like Seva. As long as you read these things and you're like, okay, this is one person's interpretation, it's quite helpful. So I went back to the Gutka after reading one of the Bani interpretations of Jabji Sahib. And I realized that the lines were trying to say these things, but because it was just a one-liner, so like sometimes I write poetry, I'm pretty sure if I just put one line there, it can be, and I do it on purpose sometimes as well, that it can be interpreted in so many ways. And a lot of the language that are used in these Gurdwaras are like really Christian imagery, right? So it's just like, I pray to God and God is there, and then felt like me, it kept on saying pray to God, pray to God, pray to God. I was like, I'm not, like, that makes no sense to me. But the interpretations of the ones that are more in depth, or trying to go back to the Bani, and like from what I understand of Gurmukhi and Punjabi, trying to interpret it myself, it's variations of it. When they do say like pray to God, God is loving, that's very different to saying pray to God because God is forgiving. Because even though love and forgiveness are really similar and they sometimes overlap, they're very different things. So if you're talking about someone's love for you and someone's ability to forgive you, it's really different. And those small differences are really hard to pick up in English. But then that's kind of when I started realizing that there's like a lot more to the Bani than I was like picking up at first glance. And I had to kind of start thinking about Bani as poetry, which it is, but like you don't really realize that at a young age. So I had to start picking it up as like, okay, so if this was a poem, what would it mean? Like, analyze it, like do your GCSE English literature analysis of this Bani.
Yeah.
And that's actually helped a lot. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I've like not realized that this is poetry. Like, if I'm obviously, if you read some poems, like if you read my poems and take them for like literal meaning, that'll be so weird. Like, I think if you read my like recent post, which is about like a river and going to like a river, like take me to the river, like that's just like a really random thing to say. And it's like, please do not think about actually going to a river.
If someone is saying that to you, I would question it.
Like, it's just such a weird thing. And then I was like, how can I write poetry and not realize that this is poetry as well? But I think a lot of that, just that love, is because it's in Gurmukhi, when it gets translated to English, it's not always trying to be poetic. And sometimes it can't be poetic because we just don't have the words in English.
That is an interesting take, and I think we spoke about translations briefly before as well.
Okay, so yeah, basically we were having a conversation the other day trying to think about what we were going to say in this podcast, because I'm really disorganized and I needed help. But so we
about
We were talking about how Bani is as poetry, right? And I was just like, oh, like when we read Bani, we're reading broken up Bani. I don't know the word for it. Like non-letting bar Bani.
Yeah. Just so, like separated.
Yeah, separated Bani. Yeah. Bani. But letting bar Bani is basically all the words are joined up, so there's no spaces. And that's why we sort of have rahal, so you know when to pause after each sort of like paragraph and like reflect on what you've just read. So before the British invaded India, we had Larivarbani, which was, so Bani was written in the Gurmukhi script without any gaps. So when you would read it, you had to pick up on the words yourself. Mm. And obviously, because it was the language at the time and you're kind of connected to the language, you'll be able to pick up the words. So like if someone was to write in English and they were to write the whole sentence joined up together, you will be able to read it, like loads of the memes we see, loads of the posts we
see.
Sometimes you do that and you're like, oh my god, my brain's so smart, but like you know the words, right?
Yeah,
it was the same for Bani, and a lot of that influence is like your unconscious being like, those words are there, so you kind of like, it's almost like it's a higher way of thinking for you. It's like second nature to you to see what words are there. And sometimes you will, like, if you see those word searches of like words of being like, this is how your year is going to be, whatever three words you see, like, that was not meant to rhyme, by the way.
It just comes naturally to you, doesn't it?
But when you see those things, it's usually what's on your mind or what you've just seen previously. So something like that is playing on your mind, so you'll pick up that word. So if you were just talking to, I don't know, your mother 2 seconds ago, you might see family before you see any other word, right? So they're like psychology tricks. And obviously Barney knows all these things before even we know them through science, right? So you would be picking it up on a very emotional basis. And it's a raw way to connect with writing, right? But when the British came, they sent loads of anthropologists, which are basically people that study human behavior and the norms of a culture and how the culture engages with one another. And because India was such a diverse place, these people had to be put in place because there were so many different types of people they were trying to understand. So the Sikhs, the Muslims, the Hindus, all the different communities that were within India. Because obviously in order to rule somewhere, you need to know who you're ruling, right? So these people came in, and obviously they're going to go to the religious texts because they realized that this country is really built on religion and loads of people really value religion above all else. So when they came and they started studying it, because of the way that English, they had to break down the words in order for English speaking anthropologists, usually who were Christian missionaries, had to understand what the Sikhs were talking about, right? So they broke up Larivarbani into segments, and that's how they interpret it. And a lot of the English translations that they gave are the kind of English translations we see, hence all the like Christian imagery and stuff. And obviously English in itself will have loads of Christian imagery just because of the nature of the language, right? And just the origins from Latin and stuff like that. When they did that, it kind of started being printed as separated words, so it became the norm of Larivar not being Larivar anymore, right? And even the Godwara were like, "What? This is not our way, and this is kind of like messed up." But they were being colonized, right? So you don't really get to say these things. And rumors started circulating, or stories were implanted in the community of like false, I think they're like Sakis, just like stories of the gurus and stuff of like trying to justify why the words are broken up. Like I think they tried to circulate this story of like someone tried to talk to Guruji and Guruji cut limb from limb or something, and that's why Barney is meant to be separated or something like that. It's a really random story, but it's like obviously not true, right? And we because of the fact that the words are separated by someone else, obviously there has been work by people. So obviously our own Sikh scholars have like gone to the Barney and been like, oh, this word seems a bit wrong, maybe it should be connected this way. But like, say if something was connected in English and they were similar, I can't think of an example right now, but if it had I don't know, an A at the end of the word or something, it can easily be translated into A separately. And words could have easily been cut in the places they weren't meant to be cut. And this was by someone who was not Gurmukhi speaking. And Gurmukhi is written in so many different languages. Like Gurmukhi was just the script. There's like really like so many languages that are in Barney, referenced in Barney. So when these words were split, it's kind of like, well, do we know that we have the correct words in the first place? Do we have the correct translations of these words? And it's also just like your experience of the art has changed, right? If an artist is to create a piece of work, you have to consume it in the way it is, right? Create art and then just have someone change the colors of your art, or you don't write poetry and let someone fidget. Like, if I've put a capital letter somewhere and a full stop somewhere, and like a word that's not meant to be, I don't know, if a word is written in a weird way, you're spelled wrong or something. Sometimes I might spell something wrong because I can't spell. But usually it's intentional, right? So you can't change that. If someone has written something like heard, like to be heard, they write heard as in like a animal heard, right? I have the word heard in front of me. I'm sorry, that's such a weird example. So maybe the poem is about like sheeps or something, and they want you to know that it's about sheep, so they write heard instead of being listened to, but they mean both.
Yeah.
So like every single small decision is really intentional. So say like how the Guruji has written Rahal, you can't take Rahal out of Bani, right? Because that is meant for, this is the end of this segment, like reflect on what is just said before. Like you need to consolidate what was said before. So the tinkering with Bani, one, is obviously malicious. Two, it can easily be incorrect. And three, it kind of takes away from the spiritual way that you work with Bani. And obviously I've done psychology, right? So I love the concept of the unconscious mind and the conscious mind. Conscious mind being what you're aware of, unconscious mind being thoughts and stuff you're feeling and having that you aren't aware of, right? So they're happening under the surface. So when someone says listen to your heart, I usually presume that they mean the unconscious, right? So that power of the unconscious is taken away because you're being spoon-fed these words, right? And maybe Bani was never meant to be easy to be read. Maybe you were meant to be well-versed in Bani and you were meant to like educate yourself on what the words could possibly mean before reading the Bani directly. I don't know. There could be so many reasons. But yeah, that's just stuff that I was not aware of either until like 2 years ago. And I was like, what is this? Like, how did I not even know what my guru, the living, breathing, currently in front of us guru, is like? I'm so like far from our Sikhi and how it is meant to be and the authentic nature of Sikhi that I don't even know that my guru has been changed. Like if we think about Guruji as we're meant to, being the 11th guru, so the jyot of every single guru before, and just the only guru that we have now, right? Like that's meant to mean something to us. So if someone just came and did like Vedvi of Guru Sahib now, no one would stand for it, right? Everyone's talking about integration marriages and stuff like that, which I'm not going to go into. But like, or they're talking about like when we had all those cases in India of them ripping Bani or setting Bani on fire and stuff like that. It's our guru. They're insulting our guru and they're hurting our guru. But when the Gore came and they colonized us and they did this to our body, a lot of us don't even know about it. So that just really put into perspective of like, I need to sit down and educate myself on Bani way more than I currently have and just be really aware of the fact that interpretations are interpretations because they're not right from the source in the first place, let alone all the human error that can take place.
Yeah, because I mean, I didn't know about, well, I think you know, but you never really look into it.
Yeah.
And for me, like I never looked into it until you had mentioned it. And everything you said, it makes sense. And it's actually so sad that, like you said, the jyot of all of the gurus that we had prior to Guru Granth Sahib Ji, it's been taken and it's like the Bani's been changed to suit a whole nother group of people who, I'm not gonna lie, probably that it doesn't make a difference to their lives. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So it's hard to even think about the fact that we, you know, now we work so hard on interpreting Bani to help us through this life, but again, the interpretations that we might be reading might be so different to the way that our Guru Sahibs had wanted them to be. And I think that's where there's so much error in how Bani has been interpreted by people nowadays, because I can take Bani and someone else can take the same Bani, but we both might look at it from completely different angles. I mean, I wouldn't say that's always a bad thing, because sometimes the Bani that you take can help you in your life in a way that would suit you better and make you a better person. But again, it comes down to that thing of Gurmukhi being so many different languages as it is, as you said. You know, there's Arabic words that are so similar, they're in Sanskrit, then you have Persian, and that are built into Gurmukhi. So as it is, it's very complex. Then when you have so many different interpretations of it, that's when I think things get a little bit more complicated. But I don't at all think that it takes different interpretations take away the power that is it that lies within Gurbani. I think even if Jeff and Tom interpret the same Bani differently, there's so much power within Bani that I think that the initial message or meaning behind Bani will always be the same, even if it's read differently.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so it, coming back to like the power that is within Bani, if we look at Jab Sahib itself, I think Jab Sahib has so much power within, like I think that every Bani has, but that Bartin in particular, we see a lot of repetition, and you spoke about repetition as well. What is the actual, I mean, you do the writing, right? So what is the power of having words that repeat itself, but also just singular words that describe Waigluji, and how does that impact people?
So, like, repetition is obviously usually something that if we're just going to go off writing is used to highlight a concept and indicate that it's important, right? Like, this is at the core of the poem or the core of whatever piece, or this is the main theme I'm talking about, right? So, obviously, Bani is going to repeat itself because it's about connecting with God. So, if God was not repeated, and I say God because we're talking in English, but like obviously I do not want you guys to think of like,
need to say that as well, like a lot of words within this podcast and a lot of other podcasts are just translated into English just for the sake of the listeners, so that everyone can kind of be on board with things. It doesn't mean any disrespect at all. But yeah, continue.
And we're not experts as well. So like everything we say with like a pinch of salt.
Yes, of course, yeah.
You have to repeat it, right? If Bani is trying to tell us that God is prevalent, everything is within God's sort of like grand laws, like hukum, so like is how God designed it to be, right? If those words weren't repeated, you would get like two pages in and you'll just forget that it's meant to be about God, right? So I think that's a very conscious thing, and that's a very also just reflective of the gurus as well, because it's meant to be like they're constantly thinking about God because they're connected with God, and it's just like a constant naam jap to them as well, right? So like obviously so take it back to like normal, like in a way that maybe the listeners and how I could understand it. When you are really obsessed with something, and I say obsessed but like not in a negative way, because we don't get obsessed with Babaji in like a negative way, but like when you really love something, you will bring that up in conversation and you will constantly talk about. So say if you're really in love with someone, right, they will come up in your conversations constantly. You will probably mention them quite a bit to the different people you're talking about. Or say if you really like something, so like books, no matter what you talk about, you're going to manage to weave books into it, right? So that's the same with like Bani in a more important way, right? So obviously the repetition is there to really remind us to connect with God, and that's what the core message is. So loads of things can be interpreted in a really weird way. So there's stuff in Bani that is like, so say the metaphor of husband is used quite a bit in Bani, but they use God again to remind you that this metaphor is for God and is not for like the male you've married, right? And it's not just for women to follow, it's everyone reading the Bani because the metaphor is for God. There's loads of metaphors in Bani. If like, I think if God wasn't constantly mentioned, loads more things can be lost in interpretation and translation, right? And in terms of the repeating of like metaphors and stuff and like concepts, so like I like to think about stuff like the different words that they're using as being encompassing of the fact that God is everything as well. So if you use a variety of metaphors, for me it's because they see God in everything. They see God in nature, they see God in the people, they see God in everything they say and do and in actions and stuff like that, right? So the different metaphors can be reflective of that, and that's obviously my interpretation. But so say, I also think it's like layers, right? So say if you have a metaphor of a tree, you can easily talk about the leaves of a tree or the branches of the tree or the roots of a tree, which will instantly make you think of different things. So say like roots, we often talk about in terms of like what grounds us and like where we're from, just because that metaphor has been used so many times. So when someone says roots in the context of a metaphor, you're going to think of that initially, unless they tell you to think otherwise, right? So it's the same as like the trunk could probably mean like stability and stuff like that, right? So if you're talking about these metaphors, obviously the Gurujis have really thought things through. I really do not believe that any metaphor is used in Vani to be only off that concept. So say if Guruji has spoken about the ocean, it's not just about the way the waves are, but it's also about the depth of the ocean and about the color of the ocean and stuff like that. And that is actually mentioned in Vani, like the dark ocean being like Maya and stuff like that sometimes as a metaphor, or it being like you can get lost at the sea. Like I think the metaphor is so extended. It's almost like when you write a book and that metaphor you've used is underlying the whole book. One book I can think of is like Kite Runner. Every single time the metaphor of a kite is used and the different elements of the kite is used is to underpin this whole big underlying theme. I think that it's the same with Vani.
Us as Sangha, we're always referred to as soul brides. Mm-hmm. And adding to the husband concept that you just spoke about as well, obviously we're not brides with us, but it's just the idea of being that in love with Maharaj and also coming to a point where you then will merge with Maharaj, you know, in the future at the point of your passing, and that is the point at which you are wedded to Maharaj, you merge with Maharaj, and you know, you go into your next janam, like hopefully into Sachkhand. But it's just that idea of like how many different pieces, like I don't know, literary techniques are within Vani. And you know, we talk about repetition as well, and the metaphors, and do all of these add power to Vani?
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely does, because they all have such a deep reason for being there. And I say that Guruji is writing poetry, but their poetry is like to another level, right? Mm. Every single thing, like the more you think about it, the more it becomes apparent to you that every single thing about it is conscious, right? From the beginning to the end, from every single word, the way it flows, the way it's written, what words are used, how it's punctuated, what languages are actually being used in the Gurmukhi script. All of it is really, really conscious. And you can see that because if you tried to take Vani and analyze it how your English teacher would make you analyze it, you'll find context, you'll find character, you'll find all the literary devices in it, and it makes a huge difference. Like the context isn't in Vani for the sake of it, right? So all the reference to different Sikhs in the community or non-Sikhs in the community that were like important at the time, or the concepts that were important at the time that would be easier for people off India to understand Sikhi was used. So Islam is mentioned and Hinduism is mentioned because, and you have less mention of like Christianity, right? I don't think there's mention of Christianity, I don't know. But it's because that's what the people of India had, right? That and that's context, because you have to know the history in order to complement Vani. When I think about it, because I write, I'm just like, wow, like this is written in such a beautiful, oh my God, I couldn't even explain it in words. It's just really conscious. It's definitely there with a purpose, and it definitely always strengthens it. And if you feel like it doesn't, that's a fault at our, like that's our fault. Like I didn't think the repetition was effective at a younger age, but that was my fault because I was not connecting with the Vani technically. Mm. I was trying to connect to this random interpretation.
And yeah, like you said, you know, there's a lot of mention of different faiths within Gurbani as well. And I did a podcast with a couple of my friends as well who are different faiths. I feel like there's so much discussion on the differences between different faiths, but no one actually talks about how similar faiths are. And you can see within Vani how Guru Sahib has studied every other faith as well. Guru Sahib has understood the way that the truth should be portrayed, but also how the truth should be carried in generations to come, which is why we see a lot of what we do within Gurbani about different faiths, because there is truth in every other faith, and Guru Sahib makes it very, very apparent that that is the case, because I feel like a lot of the time a lot of people discuss how the truth has been lost within any faith, which isn't correct. Like, in my opinion, it shouldn't, like, that's not how we should be talking about different faiths. And the way that Guru Sahib does that within Bani, through the different, you know, ways of writing, makes it a lot more powerful, like you said. But also, even the, like, little things that we don't think about, you spoke about Rahal and the power of that pause. And now when you're reading Bani, and, you know, when I was younger and just reading Hrera Saibabad, I would just come to the Rahal, but I wouldn't actually take it in. But now, obviously, now that you understand the power behind the repetition, behind the pause, there is a lot more power that lies within it, rather than when you're just reading it without actually thinking about it, if that makes sense. So what effect does, like, actually taking in the different techniques that have been used to write Bani, what effect does that have on the reader, but also the ways in which you interpret what the Bani is actually saying?
I think it's really important that loads of religion has become like an institution, right? So it's always only thought through a political lens rather than also a spiritual one, right? And because of that, we focus on differences more and distancing ourselves from faith, because obviously people are trying to make you seem like you're the same faith and stuff like that. It's all a political thing rather than the fact that religion and the people who try to be spiritual in that sense are trying to connect with God, right? And that is the purpose of it. Like, everyone is out here trying to connect to God, and that's what Guru Sahib says in Bani, like, no matter our differences, that we're just trying to meet God, and everyone's trying to do it in their different ways, and there is only one path to God. But it doesn't mean that there's only one way to get onto that path, if that makes sense. When you are, like, say, I'm going back to the English lessons, and I hope that everyone has had English literature lessons, otherwise no one's going to understand. But in lesson, and the teachers, like, interpret this piece of text or this poem, you can't do that until the teacher tells you, here are the devices, here is the context, and here is how you approach it, right? You need to know how to analyze poems. You need to know what you're looking for, right? Like, obviously, if you read a poem without analyzing it, you are going to get something from it, because it's an emotional thing. It's an experience that every good poet should make you feel something without you having to interpret it. But if you really want to fall in love with someone's poetry, if you really want to know what the poet might have meant and what the poet is trying to make you feel, because usually it's about us and how we're interpreting something and experiencing, but it's about our feelings. But sometimes you want to go the extra distance and you really just want to know how this person crafted it and what they could have meant. You want to get inside their head. That's when you start interpreting poetry, and that's when I think poetry becomes better, because you realize that every single word that they've said has a meaning, every single line, every single structure has this really strong intention behind it. So the next time you read it, you're going to have a much more of a profound experience with the work, because you realize that they've really thought about this, and you can even see the parallels. So say if someone has written, I don't know, it's a love poem, right? But if you interpret it further and you realize that the poem, I don't know, is using this extended metaphor of a train, and you realize that the first sentence said something about how they met at a train station, right? When you realize that, oh my God, this is like a train metaphor, because they met this person at the train station, it adds a layer of like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, I don't know if that's just me geeking out about poetry and if everyone feels, but like it adds so much to it. Like when you read these things and you're just like, I see this person's mind in this work and I see their emotions in this, that's when it becomes like, wow. So say if there is a really negative word being repeated in a poem, something that's, I don't know, death. We usually think of death as a negative thing, and they have constantly repeated the word death in their poem. You'll feel uncomfortable, right? But when you actually start to count, like, oh my god, they said death like 50 times in this poem and it's like five lines, that will add like another layer of like, this is a heavy poem, if that makes sense. So it definitely will affect your experience, and in a way you have to learn those devices, and you have to learn. I'm not saying go take a poetry lesson, that's not what I'm saying.
No, like, what Benji's saying is she's offering poetry lessons for everyone. She's here to help if anyone wants to learn some literary techniques.
Oh my god, like I'm still learning them myself, but like extending the metaphor of Barney and it being poetry and stuff, right? Barney is telling you to connect with your history, to connect with God, to connect with the people around you, to actually experience the people around you. Like in Barney it says to experience Maya but not get lost in Maya. So you have to live your life. Like Barney, in order to understand Barney, you have to live your life, but not in a way that you're getting lost in Maya. So I'm not saying go live your life like YOLO. Like, no, I'm not saying that. But you do have to experience things in life, right? And that will impact your experience of Barney, right? And you have to do it. And it's not learn these poetry devices, it's learn. That will also help, to be honest, if you want to geek out about Barney. But like, it's the poetry devices for Barney is life, right? You have to engage with Sangat, you have to engage with Pangat, you have to do all these things that the gurus are mentioning, and you have to learn the history of it, right? And you will fall in love with the history of it. Like, trust me, coming from someone who hated history, you will fall in love with your history because it's about you. Finding the right writer or the right person to tell you the history is a whole other thing. But because you'll learn those contexts, it's important and it adds to the experience. And obviously Barney is not there to be read once, so you don't have to go and just learn these things straight away. So the first time you read Barney, you don't have to think about these things. Maybe when, I don't know, something happens and you've read a history book and you read it again, it will change the way that Barney feels to you, right? And Barney is Guru Sahib, right? You're having a conversation with God. When you have a conversation, it's not repetitive. You might say talk about the same topics, but a conversation is never the same as a conversation you've had before. And that's the same with Barney. When you come to Guru Sahib, when you're feeling low, you're gonna have a very different interpretation of Barney than when you're really happy. Like when I was not in a good place and I read Japji Sahib, and it was talking about how we have to have done something, I don't know by heart, so I'm not gonna even try to say it, so this is how I interpreted it. So obviously lost in interpretation. But it was saying that in order to obtain this life as a human, you have to have done some good in your past life. Like, this life is a blessing. And I had to cry because I was like, because I felt so low and I felt like I wasn't good enough, or I felt like I wasn't doing stuff right. And when I read that one line in Gurmukhi that I've like always skimmed over and it's never just like stood out like that, that time I read it, it stood out a lot. And it made me have this experience that I've never had before with Barney. And so obviously every single time something happens to you or something, you experience life, right? You go on living and you're going to notice something and you're going to have a different experience with Guru Sahib. And that makes Guru Sahib more real to you. And you can't have that experience with Guru Sahib unless you're reading Guru Sahib, right? Otherwise, it's always going to be that book you bow down to in the Gurdwara. When Guru Sahib is anything but.
That's a really good point that you've made, because even within Japji Sahib, the Barney Sunya Duk Bapkanas, like listening to Guru Sahib, your Duk and your Bap, your sadness, they're erased. That's Guru Sahib's words themselves. That's where Guru Sahib's genuinely saying, like, truly listening to Barney, to your Bard, to the words of the Guru will actually erase your dog. But if you're lightly skimming over it, like we said, where as kids, you know, we're just reading it or we're listening to it, we're going to the Godwara and we're sitting there, but we're not taking it in, nothing's really going to have an impact on you until you've actually taken it in. And that goes for anything in life in general, but in reference to Guru Sahib's words here, in reference to Barney, you won't actually reap the benefits of sikhi unless you've truly, I want to say, committed yourself to really trying to understand why Guru Sahib has written Baat or Bani the way that they have, to truly understand Guru Sahib's hukum. You won't get to that point unless you've committed to actually trying to learn what Guru Sahib is trying to tell us.
And building on to what you said as well, like, I know that both of us have spoken about, like, an experience we've had with Guru Sahib. It doesn't always have to happen straight away. And, like, mm-hmm. if you're not connecting with Bani, but you're trying, don't feel discouraged either. Like, it's not saying that you haven't done, like, as long as you're trying to read Bani and as long as you're trying to connect with Guru Sahib, with your experiences changing every day, there will be a time when you're going to connect with Guruji, and it will be in hukum, right? So when the time is right, you will connect with Guru Sahib.
Mm.
So don't be discouraged. Like,
no, it's so true. Yeah. Definitely. I think like the way that I felt and the way that you felt when we used to, you know, recite Baat or even just go to the Gurdwara is so different to the way that we feel now. And that comes with, like you said, reading into Sikhi, but also it just comes with time and it comes with constantly practicing. I've had so many people tell me that they recite Baat, but they just don't feel anything. You know, there was a point where I was also at that level where I was reciting Baat, but like back then it was just, you know, I'm praying, but now it's like, no, I'm, again, it's just something you can't explain. Like, I'm trying to put it into words, but you can't put that level of bliss into words. You can't put that experience into words. But everyone eventually will come to the point where they experience the same thing, but it doesn't, again, it doesn't just happen overnight.
Saying I've had a experience with Bani doesn't mean every single time I read Bani, I'm connecting to Bani on like
exactly
different level. Like, mm-hmm. if you don't like really enjoy reading Bani one day and the next day, it's like, no,
it's
it's like, it's not going to be like a linear upwards thing once you've had that experience or whatever.
Exactly, like, you don't get the same experience twice.
Yeah, so
stick
at it.
Yeah, stick to it, because you don't get the same experience twice. Even the good experiences that we have had with Bani change, because they just get better. I'm like, the next time I have a good experience will be better than the time I've had a good experience before it. But it's something that you have to practice, and it's something that you have to stick at. I think, you know, if we have the patience with so many other things in our lives, some of the things that connected to Maya that we had so much patience for, if you put the same amount of patience into this, the benefits will come to you, and then in the future you'll be in the same position where you're like, actually, do you know what, I had that time where I just didn't stick by it and I thought there was no point in it, but now I'm so glad that I did stick to it, because this is what I'm getting from just having that patience at the time, but also having the patience to read into Sikhi a lot more, reading into Bani a lot more. I always say to the girls that I work with for Sikhi class that the way I interpret something is going to be completely different to the way you interpret something, and I'm trying to increase the amount of conversation we have around Sikhi, because the girls have different opinions on certain things or different interpretations of things, and this is how we end up learning about Sikhi a lot more, because you learn from your Sangat, and that's why Sangat is so important in Sikhi, because Sahib knows that everyone's minds work differently, the way that we look at life is different, and the experiences that we go through are different, and that shapes the way that you read Bani but also take in Bani. And so I encourage conversation a lot more about what it is that you've read, but also how you've taken it in and how it's impacted you, because everyone can learn from things like that, which is why, like, you know, the books that you read as well about the interpretations, I think that's such a good idea, because I can watch a video on YouTube about someone talking about a certain topic in Sikhi, but I will not let that form my opinion until I've gone and read about it myself and have my own sort of think about things.
And even like with books though, like, I read books because I will lose attention during a video, right? If a video is playing, I'm gonna like start thinking about something totally different. But for me, if I have like a physical book there with me, I'm more likely to actually like read it, right? And like understand what's on the page. And you have to, like, you really, really have to be aware. And I try to say this as much as possible, but I don't think I say it enough. Everyone has their biases, right? And some people have an agenda. Most people have an agenda. Like, everyone has, like, some kind of agenda. Some people have a positive one. Some people have a negative one. But you have to be aware of that with everything you read and everything you're hearing. Even if you've heard something 10 times, you have to look at who has said it to you. Like, if 10 Gore are talking about Sikhi and they're from Christian missionaries, it doesn't matter if it's said 10 times. That is probably not going to have the same weight as, say, someone that's a son has said something and they're like a full under 30 Sikh that is practicing Sikhi. Like, the Sangha and everyone that's around them sees that, right? That's very different. Like, just because something is repeated a lot, especially on social media, like stuff like Twitter, if you're getting your information from Twitter and being like, oh, but they referenced it, do you know who they're referencing? Just because something is in a book doesn't make it fact. Like, I know loads of people are like, they'll be more hesitant to believe stuff on a YouTube video and on social media, but the moment they read it in a book, they're like, yeah, that's the truth. No, like, please don't do that. Like, everything has taught me not to do that from, like, Sikhi context as well as university context. You're meant to know what the source is. Like, you have to know who said that, like, what their biases is. And sometimes it's not easy to know that, so you find someone else and see if they're saying something, and you see if you can stalk them, basically.
Yeah, it's all about knowing who you're allowing to influence you as well.
My dad talks about Song Sing Sito, and they've read the books and they're like English interpretations of the book. So obviously they're going to lose some meaning. But because someone I kind of trust in this stuff has said it, I'll be like, yeah, I'll read that person first rather than someone like McLeod or something, because I'm just like, I don't think I'm ready. And knowing that for yourself is really important as well. Like, if you just know you're not ready for certain stuff, or looking into certain topics. So say if like 1984 is something you want to learn about, but you don't want to go into the testimonies and stuff like that yet. Like, know that for yourself and know when you're gonna like test those boundaries. Because obviously you can sometimes get caught up in your comfort zone as well. But like, if you're really not ready for it, it will probably have a negative experience on you rather than a positive one. So don't force yourself just because people on social media are talking about this. Don't force yourself to do it. Like, right now, like, the farmer protests are really important for us to focus on and stuff. But say if you have like family who passed away because of suicide, because of relating to farmer related issues, and you're not ready to talk about it yet, do not feel pressured by people to do it. Like, this is your journey and your journey alone. Allow everyone else. This is you and between your guru. Like, take your time and however you're ready to do it.
Yeah, we need to push the amount of people that feel like it's okay to comment on everyone else's Sikhi journey. This is why I'm doing podcasts, because I want to push more conversation about things like this so that people can see that their Sikhi journeys are absolutely fine, despite hearing that, you know, XYZ said you shouldn't do it that way. Like you said, you know, do everything at your own pace and don't feel pressured by external voices, external opinions, or just things that you see on social media that are telling you that you're not doing it correctly. And that even comes back down to taking your time with Bani and taking your time to learn the true meaning and the truth behind Bani and the truth behind Guru Sahib's words, because it doesn't happen overnight and you can't expect it to happen overnight.
And we've spoken about them from being younger. Like, even though we say like there's this point where I feel like it got sped up, that is not to say that like it wasn't there from the moment you were born, right? From the moment you're born, you have started your Sikhi journey, no matter if you went backwards or forwards or whatnot. It's still the journey you're on, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you've done, what you've not done. It's about how you move forward now. And you just got to keep on taking it in baby steps. Because trust me, when it comes to this stuff, there's a lot to learn. And it can be daunting when you hear people who know what they're talking about it. But the more you learn, the more you realize that they're still learning as well, right? Like, we're all in this together. And like, I know Sangha, like, people say like, oh, but like, why can't I say stuff? Because we're sangat, right? Well, the bunt is meant to talk about this stuff. Yeah, they are. But no one is meant to make you feel uncomfortable, right? Like, obviously, that's, like, uncomfortable because of your ego and stuff, right? But, like, that being said, like, no matter what, right, this is still your journey, right? We have the need to pull each other up, but find your right sangat that will pull you up, right? If there's someone that you feel really attacked by, but then there's someone else saying the same thing, but they're saying it in a much more sensitive way and you feel more comfortable with that person, include them in your sangat. You don't need the other person in your sangat, right? It's just about finding the right sangat that will help you improve yourself but not make you feel overwhelmed and pressured and stuff like that. And you need to be honest with yourself as well. Like,
yes,
if you're feeling pressured and you're feeling scared with your Sikhi journey, is it because, I don't know, I think the psychology stuff comes into play, but like, what is it you feel? Is it because you're attached to stuff? Is it because you're angry with people for saying stuff to you? Is it because you don't feel you're good enough? Because I feel like a lot of us have that issue of like, I'm not good enough for Sikhi.
And
it's about becoming better. It's not about not being good enough. Like Guruji says that Guruji is in everyone, right? So the potential is in everyone. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise, right? Just find the right sangat. And it's not easy. Like, trust me, I had the worst sangat. And by that, I don't mean like they were really, really bad people. Some of them were. But like, they just weren't helping me with the Sikhi path, right? And by this, I mean non-Sikhs as well, right? There are friends I have that are really cool in terms of being really consciously aware of what they're doing, right? They don't just like just cruise by life and just be like, yeah, whatever. They are really conscious with the stuff they say, the stuff they do, the media they consume and stuff. And for me, that is how I interpret Sikhi. And these people help me feel more conscious about the world around me. Some people I'm friends with are like Hindu or something, but they're really spiritual and that they have this respect for God and they talk about God a lot. So bear that sangat as well. Your sangat, do not just think it's about just Sikhs as well. Like, some people don't have Sikh sangat and it's okay, as long as there's principles of Sikhi. Like, there's one path to God. Loads of people can be on it. Like, you just gotta find the right people to be your sangat. It doesn't have to be Amritdhari Sikhs. That's it. No one else is allowed in your sangat. So you can have multiple circles of sangat as well. So that's really important to know. Because like, sometimes you need to have a circle that, I don't know, is for school and they're really good at like maths and you're doing a maths degree and you have to be with them. That's fine as well, right? But just know that your sangat impacts you. And you just don't be afraid to, like, you know, like, cut people off and be like, nah, I'm done.
No, it heavily impacts you. It heavily impacts your journey into any faith. Before Sikhi class, I had no Sikh sangat, none at all. And I can honestly say that the people that I surrounded myself with who were of different faiths, and I'm very lucky because my sangat is from all different backgrounds. Like, I have Christian sangat, I have like Muslim sangat, I have like just people that believe in different things, but ultimately we all have the same goal and we're ultimately all on the same path. And these are the same people that pushed me into Sikhi a lot more, because I think there were so many and there still is so many faults within me, so many things that I could improve on, and these are the same people that see that there are so many things that you can improve on, and this is the one way that you can do it and truly be able to improve on yourself. And it's if you gain that connection with God. And I saw, you know, people like my best mate, and then, you know, all of my best mates, who the girls that I live with, from the girls back home, like, because I live out of uni, of course. So these are the same people that, you know, whenever I've had a bad day or they have a bad day, the one thing that we always say to each other is, have you prayed about it? And every single time we have the same response. Before we give any type of advice, it's always, have you prayed about it? That is the sangat that you need to surround yourself around, because that's the same sangat that are going to push you towards God and not away from God. And that's the same sangat that are going to push you to be better rather than get lost in Maya, in the bunch drawer, and lead you to do things that are not beneficial for you. You know, that's where you grow attachments to things that are not going to help your spiritual journey. So Sangat is never just Sikh Sangat, because you can have Sangat that are of different backgrounds, of different faiths, that will probably be better than some Sikh Sangat that you surround yourself around.
Just because someone has four or Sikh doesn't mean that they're Sikh Sangat, is what I'm trying to say. And that might get me into trouble.
No, do you know what? It makes sense, though.
Following Sikhi, right? They're on a path of Sikhi. If you think someone's not on a path of Sikhi, and I don't mean this in a way of, like, judge someone Sikhi. Like, please do not do that. Mm-hmm. If you don't expect your Sikhi to be judged, don't judge someone else's. But it's about, are their values aligning with yours, and are they making you a better person? If the answer is no, what use does this person have to you? And if they still do have a use to you, then, like, sure, whatever. But if they don't, like, you can kind of, like, for me, one rule of Sangat that I kind of have is, if someone thinks they're perfect, I don't want to be around them. So, like, what you said of, like, oh, I have loads of faults, that for me is normal Sangat. Your Sangat has to have that. If they think they're perfect, I can't be around them, because I feel like, if you think you're perfect, there's no way you're consciously trying to grow. And I need people who are constantly pushing themselves to grow as people. Like, even stuff like, because of the small things I've done in my life, like poetry, right? I never thought I was good at writing. And then one day, I always wanted to be good at writing. I always wanted to be artistic. And then one day I was like, you can't just want to be artistic, you have to try. And I started trying. And I'm like, here I am, and I still want to be more artistic, so I'm trying more. But, like, you have to, even the small things in your life, if you want something, you have to go for it as well, right? If you're just stationary, you're not gonna get that single thing, you're not gonna get, and the rest of it is, like, hukum as well. Like, right now you might not be able to think of, like, a single person you want to be around, and sometimes that's bad, but at least you have social media, so you can at least consume stuff that will feel like Sangha, that will help, right? Like, you have to know you're not alone, right? Like, anyone who listens to this, the fact that they even got this far in Sangha, they can message me if they need Sangha. And I don't mean, like, just about Sikhi, if you just need someone to build it, you can message me, because I made it this far in the podcast.
And just building on that point, if you feel like you haven't got Sangha, make ardas for Sangha, because Guru Sai will bring you that Sangha. If you truly, from the bottom of your heart, want to be surrounded by good Sangat, Guru Sahib will bring that to you.
It's that thing of, like, take one step towards the Guru, and then Guru, like, Guru Sahib takes 1,000 towards you or something, or 10,000 towards you.
Yeah, it's so true. 100%. It's so true. And like you said, if someone within your Sangat circle is not benefiting your life at all, and they are taking you off your spiritual journey, there is no need for them, because, you know, this life is hard enough as it is. Let's be real, right? It's difficult as it is. Benji, me and you are in the same age, and, like, we were talking before about how similar experiences are, and it just shows that, like, you don't need extra voices that are gonna just make this life difficult for you. You need to surround yourself with good vibes, and you can get good vibes from good Sangat, but you just got to be careful. You got to check you allow into your Sangat circle.
I want to add, sometimes you can't exclude people from your Sangha. Sometimes it's family, sometimes it's people you sit with at school, because you just can't. Like, if you have that as well, maybe try to, like nullify their effects as well by increasing your positive Sangha as well. Don't get too caught up, because I know loads of people get caught up in, like, oh, I can't get rid of this person, they're bringing me down. That thought is going to bring you down as well, right? Like, if you let that person take up so much space in your heart and your mind, that is increasing their Sangat on you even more than it needs to be, right? So sometimes if you can't, don't worry, just, like, try to find other positive Sangat as well. Like, Guruji told us to, like, protect ourselves as well, but you have to be part of this world, and you have to be a part of Maya. So sometimes it's not possible, and it's fine. Just think of it as a challenge. Think of it as Guru Sahib's, like, sort of, like, challenge to you, like, oh, you really want to improve yourself, here's one way you can improve yourself. How are you gonna detach yourself from these people around you? And also, in terms of criticism, say if you're, like, on social media and you're getting loads of criticism, just know that social media is a place where that happens to a lot. I can guarantee you the people you look up to the most get that hate as well. Like, there are so many people. Just think about the gurus' types. Like, Guruji is flawless, and there's so many people critiquing Guruji. So that just says what it needs to say about people's criticism and stuff. Do not let it get to you. And sometimes it's okay to take a break from someone who, like Benji, is like on social media a lot. You will get that at some point, especially if you're a girl, in my opinion. You seem to get it.
Oh, 100%.
More.
Yeah.
Because you're judged in a harsher lens. But you know what? That's their problem.
It's part of it. It's part of it. And do you know what? I've grown so much from it. And I see how many other girls get so much hate for what they wear or taking a picture in general. Just like, and I think that comes down again to how people are so happy to judge everyone else's sicky path and sicky journey. The only path that you should be judging.
Just like call in your name and you will get hate. Like, allow pictures, allow all the other society stuff that men judge by. Simply that you're a cool, the lens is instantly different from my experience.
So Benji, thank you so much for joining me and having this conversation with me. I just want to hand it back to you to let everyone know where they can find you and what it is that you do.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation, so thank you for having me. My at is @AmritCorePoetry on Twitter, Instagram, and really, like, if you can think of a social media app, I'm probably on it. And it's also @AmritCoreReads if you want to see book stuff on TikTok. My Instagram is everything, so you will find book reviews, you will find photography, you will find poetry, obviously, and art. Sometimes it's sicky related, sometimes it's not. It's just me trying to be my authentic self, so I'm sorry if you just want one kind of content. Feel free to like just stalk me sometimes and leave if you don't want to follow me, that's fine. But yeah, good luck on your journey.
You just invited all the creeps into your life.